This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new season of the Back of the Nest Match Report. I'm your host, Mike, and joining me are Patrick O'Connor and Councillor Chris Clark of the Parish of Fairfield as we look at a new season and assess the opening day defeat at buzzing Selhurst in the Patrick Vieira Derby. Let's start with a few words from the panel, shall we? Patrick, how have you been? How have you dealt with the summer? Give us a bit of an update.
Been very good. Play a little golf. It's very, very hot over here right now. Very, very hot. So I'm trying to deal with the heat. But that aside, it's been a very good summer. Very good.
Yeah, it's the fact that it's even hot in Hastings means it must be absolutely roasting where you are. So yeah, feel you on that. And Chris, obviously I have seen you, but for the benefit of those people listening, how have you been?
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, you know, a few changes since the end of the season, but still very much living in Croydon, so living the dream. And it was fantastic to be back at Selhurst and back in the pubs before and after the game. You know, we play hard and we celebrate whether we win or we lose. And, you know, it was good to see some old faces back there. And we'll talk about the action, of course, as we go. But yeah, no, it's good to have football back.
I mean, it didn't really go with the Euros, did it? I was lucky enough to go to the quarterfinal, the game against Spain, and even more luckily, they put us in the away end because I wasn't very happy about the thought of sitting in a Brighton seat. It was at the Amex, but I got to sit pretty much where I have for a couple of games when we've been there away. So that's all good. Let's not talk about that team beating United. Let's just let's gloss over that. I don't think we're bottom of the league now, obviously. Let's ignore that. Let's talk about some Palace news. I mean, obviously, there's absolutely shed loads. So if you want to cover stuff back, I know the preview guys did a pretty good cover of what's happened. I don't think we've particularly discussed, for example, Richards. But we'll start with the women's squad. So there was 15 new announcements. You know, it tends to happen mainly on the back of the fact that the players are, or up until recently anyway, are semi-professional. So, you know, their contracts are never particularly long. But we'll just go over the people that have joined. Especially, I think they're going to have the biggest season they've had after the Women's Euros, etc., etc. So, Fran Kitchen's joined as a keeper. Floss Gibbons has joined from Brighton as left-back. We'll cover that in a minute. Chloe Arthur in midfield, Anna Philby in midfield, Chloe Petlow in midfield, Rihanna Dean from Liverpool, who that's Odkinson, they just got promoted, so that's a good signing. Annabelle Blanchard, Kirstine Riley, Natalia Negri as a backup keeper, Paige Bailey-Gale forward, Holly Olden defender, Ellie Noble midfielder, Elisa Hughes as a forward from Charlton, so a serious step up. Polly Duran, all the way from Melbourne, and Shauna Guyett, they've all joined. And unfortunately, there was a few hours of retweets and stuff before a Brighton account found some homophobic and racist comments. Historically, from Fliss Gibbons' Twitter account, her Twitter account's been removed, so we'll see what happens with that. But let's bear in mind the reaction that Chekhuate's got for his comments recently. So I think she's going to have to do quite a lot to turn the Palace faithful round. But yeah, the good news is there's games that are going to be at Selhurst. The first game of the season isn't, but I think the second and third are. So make sure you're on the website and check out what days you can go. If you can get to Hayes, great stuff. But the fact is, it's Selhurst. That'll be good. Quick thought from you guys on the summer and the Euros and winning it and stuff. Patrick, how, I mean, presumably in the States now, they're not that worried. They probably still think that England are miles behind. But how was it over there in terms of coverage?
Coverage was great. They had it on ESPN, I guess, had it live. So I watched all the games, not just the England games. My daughter, you know, played football, which is great. You know, she's mid-20s now, so and I coached her. So I've always been into, you know, football from the women's side, which is great. And USA, as I'm sure you know, USA's team over here has always been really good. It's actually been much better than the men's team, winning the World Cup, the Olympics, etc. So it was fun to watch. I was really, really happy. Honestly, I wasn't happy, as they say, when the men would have won it. But I'm not going to lie, I was very, very into the Euros and very, very into that game. For that first goal, was absolutely one of the best goals I've ever seen in the final. Chip the goal like that was absolutely fantastic. I mean, honestly, that was people don't talk about that goal enough. That was a brilliant goal. It really, really was.
Pretty coolly taken, wasn't it? Pretty
it really was. Taken, and, yeah. You know, and that under the circumstances. And then the winning goal, you know, the scramble and extra time was great. And then taking the shirt off, which, you know, I've seen that happen over, that was done over here by an American way back in the World Cup final. So it was fun. I really, really enjoyed it, Mike. I enjoyed the entire tournament. It was fun.
Yeah. And Chris, quick thought from you.
Well, the big thought from me on it is that I watched the final with my family, including my niece. And afterwards, she said, when are we going to football next? So, you know, that served its purpose as far as I'm concerned. You know, if we have young girls and women who, you know, now want to show more interest, and also, frankly, you know, other people showing interest in the women's game as well, then that's a fantastic thing. And the tournament served its purpose, and it now needs to be a platform for something better. I've never been to a Palace women's game, but I'm looking forward to doing that this season. Hope to see some of the listeners there. Do shout out if you're coming, you know, tag us on the Back of the Nest Twitter and say you're coming and we'll see you there.
Well, so one of the million things that I think has come out of this, and I it only hit me after they'd won it, but it looks like Palace have immediately took everything more seriously. It doesn't look like there's clashes with the men's game, which is something we've gone on about for a couple of years. So it's a good sign. My six-year-old daughter wanted to come, which came to Montpellier. She's adamant she wants to go to one of the women's games, and she's adamant her brother isn't joining us. So excellent stuff. Yeah, and let's go on to a slightly weird, low-key Benteke leaving. Just kind of came up. I remember saying it to you in the ground before the game, Chris, and because it was just before the Arsenal game, you hadn't even seen the news because you'd been in the pub. From what I've heard, it was 6.3 million. I don't know if that's just been plucked out of the air and people were moaning, but, you know, the man's not got a particularly long contract left. So, I mean, to me, it seems like a great addition for the MLS. I think he'll score plenty of goals over there. I'm sure he'll be excited to work with Wayne Rooney as well. Yeah, let's quickly talk about your favourite Benteke memories. Just your absolutely favourite one from each of you, Chris.
I mean, as you've asked me first, I think I've won because I get to say the last minute Brighton winner, smash and grab. Yeah, there are a lot, actually, because he scored some great goals for us. I love the player. You know, yes, he didn't always perform at the highest level, the level he was capable of for us. But I think he'll be a miss, and I think we will miss the option he gave in terms of hold-up play. At the moment, I don't think we've got anyone like that.
Well, let's talk about the upsides, though, first, shall we? Patrick, give me your absolute favourite memory.
The goal against Chelsea, when he sits down the Chelsea goalkeeper and kind of chips over him, is brilliant. I mean, not many strikers can be that composed to score a goal like that. And if I would have put another, can I just put another one in there? Because I just, it's a Brighton memory. They're doing so well right now.
Of course.
It's the reaction after the IU goal when he cupped his ears and ran towards the crowd. I mean, that was, yeah, that's fantastic. So those are my two favorite memories for Benteke. And I'm going to miss him. Just real quickly, I'm concerned about the timing of it. I understand him wanted to leave. I get all that. Wanted to get into the Belgium squad. Coming over here. He had been in America. Good for him. You know, DC United is not a very good team, but he'll score tons of goals here. I just think the timing's poor, and I just think we're going to have a problem replacing him. And I would hate for Eduardo or Mateta to get injured at any point the next couple of weeks, because we'd be in big trouble. But we'll get on to that.
I think there's a couple of listener comments from that, so I'm sure we'll get to that, yeah. For me, I'm pretty sure it was him that scored the goal against Liverpool that meant Sacco celebrated with him when Sacco was still a Liverpool player. So that definitely. But mainly, it's the addition of Jonathan Benteke as part of his contract when he signed. And to just see the 10 minutes of Jonathan Benteke do absolutely nothing chasing the ball around at Selhurst. Beautiful. Yeah. Teke, sir, you will be missed. Parrish, with a comment, he said, he's someone I've enjoyed a great relationship with, and he's shown incredible loyalty staying with the club when he could easily have taken other options. We all wish him all the best with the next stage of his career. I will add that probably on the wages he was on, I'm not sure that's entirely true, but I know he took a pay cut to stay and he wanted to prove himself, and I think it'd be hard to argue that he didn't. I've got a comment from producer Sam's dad that she's asked me to share. She's got two comments for the pod. The first one, a stat from producer Sam's dad is that Palace are yet to score a goal since Benteke left. So there you go. There you go. Absolutely true.
Spot on, absolutely true.
Yeah, and just a couple of things to remind you of. So they're not really time specific. So you know, while we're just getting back into the swing of things, we did a massive two parter on the end of last season, a big long interview with Dean, the Palace women manager, and then a load of questions with Matt Woosden from The Athletic. They're still up. And also, things have been going from strength to strength on YouTube. DR's been everywhere. BT Sport had him doing a lie detector test with a Brighton fan the other day. It's great. It was good to catch up with him at the game. So make sure that you get onto YouTube. Just subscribe. He's always putting stuff up there. The pods are always on Spotify as well, Apple Podcasts, wherever you usually go. But just please leave us some reviews. There's more and more Palace pods. I know when this first started, there was basically FYP and ourselves. There's a million now. So please just do leave a review, and it just helps us get away from the throng a little bit. It means a lot. None of us do it for any kind of money or anything like that. It's just for the love of Palace. Right. Let's get to the game. And obviously, we can't really talk about the game without talking about the display. So we're going to have to probably bow to you here, Patrick, because essentially Chris and myself are in Block A, and we were just provided with some bits of coloured paper. So we were basically underneath some blue paper. So I've only seen the photos from outside, but how did it look? How did it sound on the TV?
I'm honest, I don't think that NBC that did the match showed it pre-match. I don't remember seeing it. I didn't see it, honestly. Right. Sorry, until it was on Twitter, someone put it up. I never saw the display, so I apologize, but I'm not going to watch the game back because we lost. I usually watch the games back after, obviously, because you know, to enjoy it. I'm not going to watch that game back, but I'm sorry. I wish I could give you, I know it was shown, but I must have just missed it because I didn't remember seeing anything, so I went on Twitter. It looked good from what I saw on Twitter, but honestly, my friend, I did not see it live. I apologize. Sorry.
Okay. Well, you know, there's been some great reaction to it, and apparently there was a plane flown over as well, wasn't there, Chris?
There was, the one.
Let's be careful with what we say, but I think people know our opinions, so
yeah,
let's be careful with what we say.
So don't worry, I'm fairly confident that I can navigate this one. So the plane that flew over said, keep rapists off the pitch, which I think is a sentiment that I would hope that all our listeners and indeed all people would be on board with. And this related to the case of Thomas Partey, who has not been charged with rape. There was an accusation, and
let's just say here it's allegations at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it sounds like that is it. You know, no further action is going to be taken. If such an allegation was made against one of our players, I wouldn't be very happy with them continuing to play at all. Full stop for our club. And some of the Arsenal fans seem to think the same way, which is good. Although apparently there were also examples of Arsenal supporters singing "He Shags Who He Wants" at Norwood Junction Station on Friday, which is nothing short of disgraceful. And I think that's all that we need to say, really. There was a lot of dislike for party shown from our end of the ground, and rightly so.
Yeah, so, and any comments we make on our own Twitter pages obviously don't reflect the thoughts of everyone on here, but yeah, we'll leave that there. Somebody paid a fair amount of money. So that's before the game. And also before the game, the other thing that producer Sam texted me to ask me to say, and this is the most proactive she's ever been with in discussion of the game. She asked that we discuss Mark Gay as captain. And yeah, I was a little bit shocked, but it's to me, it's no bad thing. Let's get your thoughts. Start with you, Patrick.
I think he's been a good captain. I think that was his first loss as a captain since last season. I'm pretty sure we didn't lose a game last season with him as captain. And if you know, we know his background. He captained England under 21s. I like his temperament. He's calm. He's collected. He's a leader. So I have no problem with him as captain. Without Luca and Macca on the pitch, I can't think of another person. I'd probably pick Wilf, but I don't think Wilf is really captain material, honestly. I like him as a captain, but I don't think it would go over. I don't think he really wants to be captain, honestly. So I think Gahey's a pretty good choice right now.
Chris?
Well, frankly, I agree with what Patrick said. Gahey's a leader and experienced captain from, you know, what he's done with the under-21s. And, you know, he's likely to be, you know, pretty much an ever-present in our team unless he's injured. So a very sensible pick. You know, I mean, it's good practice to have a centre back or a centre midfielder as your captain, because they can diffuse messages around the team as required. Wilf, who is a leader, but is a leader of a different kind. It doesn't need any extra pressure put on him. I think you're absolutely right, Patrick. Good choice of captain.
I mean, Zahar's not going to get himself out of a heated situation, is he? And that, absolutely correct. For me, a central defender is always the obvious choice for a captain. And for me, if there's no Jimmy Mack on the pitch, and let's bear in mind, Luka came on and I thought we had a decent game, but it would be Gay or Anderson for me anyway. Yeah, absolutely no issues with that. Be interesting to see what other people think about that. Maybe put a poll up on Twitter and ask. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about Luka because he got some pelters when he came on from the people standing around me. But first half, you know, it was tough. I don't think we need to particularly relive the first 20 minutes. You know, I've heard Match of the Day, TalkSport talk about it. Let's be honest, Arsenal have absolutely swept all teams aside in pre-season. They do look good. But I think we possibly just looked a little bit undercooked early on. What do you think caused it? I mean, open to the floor on that one.
Frankly, it's the same problem as last year. Poor preparation and for the set pieces. You can't have someone unmarked when a corner's being taken. And that's what happened. That's how we conceded. Otherwise, while we weren't exactly on the front foot, I don't think that they particularly dominated. I don't think they looked particularly dangerous. And especially after their goal, they, for me, I mean, the highlights package was 2 minutes on the club website. Now, obviously, you know, I mean, you're not going to show many highlights from a defeat, especially when you've not had that many chances. But, you know, we matched them in terms of the number of shots taken. I just felt it was a fairly level game, but they were slightly sharper, and that's ultimately it. And I suppose one factor is going to have to be acknowledged is having the squad not together for pre-season. You know, we decided to chase the money and have a pre-season tour abroad. Understandable, but may not have worked out for us on this occasion.
See, and I had this discussion with D on the YouTube channel post-match. And I'm not going to buy into the lack of preparation necessarily, because we had two great chances in that match, maybe three. So there's the Edouard chance at 1-0. He's got to score that header. And there's the Eze chance at still 1-0, I believe. Yeah, still 1-0 that he missed. If we put the chances away, we either win 2-1 or we get the 2-2 draw. And it's a different narrative. Now, again, the reason I'm not going to buy into the split squad thing is because I actually thought that having a split squad was a good thing from the standpoint of players getting minutes to play, seeing some of the youngsters play, and like building relationships. Now, for instance, Schlupp, Decore, and Eze did not go to Singapore and Australia. And that was our starting midfield. And they did not play well on Friday. So that's not an excuse saying that they went all the way to Australia or Singapore. They were poor. I mean, I thought Schlupp was pretty non-existent. I thought Decore actually played well, especially his first game. But Eze did not play well. He wasn't on the ball enough. So though I would like to say it was due to preparation, I'm not buying that. Now, if we continue to lose the next three or four matches, I will change my mind and say, you're right, preparation was poor. I just think that was down to getting our chances. Navier said our post-match, not taking our chances. And again, as Chris said, rightly so, that first goal was abysmal as far as the marking. I don't know what Wilf was doing and how Zinchenko is getting a free header to knock it back to Martinelli, also a very small player. But I think it's like they always say in football, small margins. If we score those two chances that could have been a different game.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought about it that much, but it was a bit of a throwback to the first sort of 15 games of last season, wasn't it, with the marking? Yep. I'm sure he'll give him an absolute rocket. The thing for me was Arsenal uncharacteristically strong and in flooding the midfield. You know, traditionally Arsenal, the last sort of 6-7 years, it's just the one thing they haven't done. So for all the pelters party's getting, he was is pretty good at stopping that. And in the end, it was the reason that we were getting forward and working quickly was the long balls from Joachim Andersen, just bypassing them totally. And I think that was one of the reason we were breaking so quickly was just we weren't bothering playing in the midfield, but they were immense. And I don't think we particularly had the answers. But I also don't think there'll be that many teams that will test us in quite the same way. Yeah, I mean, let's pick apart the good parts. You've mentioned the players that maybe didn't do too well. Eze, also a glaring chance, and I think a few people haven't forgiven him for it, but it's also some great goalkeeping. But I thought IU looked threatening in the second half. Zahar did his thing. I mean, what were the good points going forward? But I mean, bearing in mind we didn't score a goal. But
I thought, as you just said, I thought Zahar played well, especially towards the second half. The ball that he played into Eze for that chance was brilliant. People underestimate how good of a pass that was, especially if he scores that goal. Again, I thought Decore first game was good. You know, it's his first game in the Premier League. His work ethic is brilliant. I think he breaks the lines. He passes the ball forward. If you're gonna notice a big difference between him and Cech Kouyaté as far as the way that he gets the ball forward quicker. I thought Andersen played really well. The diagonals to both Wilf and Ayew were brilliant. I mean, really opened up the Arsenal defense. But I will say again, Mike, you mentioned about Arsenal. To me, the difference between us and Arsenal from last season is really two players. Gabriel Jesus was absolutely a pain the entire game. He sets up Martinelli for that first minute chance. Dropped into midfield, dragging, you know, Gehi with him. You know, you can't play a high line because he'll run behind. Last year, Lacazette could not do that. And William Saliba, Jesus Christ, that William Saliba is a heck. I don't know why he was on loan for 2 years. He is a Rolls Royce of a defender. And he also, without him, we have to score goals, because last year, again, they had, I guess it was Ben White was playing more century last year, right, with Gabriel. But William Saliba was so good. So I think that those two additions made it a big difference. I mean, it really come down again. I'll go back to that. I'm going to keep saying small margins. If we get those two chances and we put them away, we didn't have a lot of them. It's a different game. But, you know, again, we didn't deserve to get anything out of it necessarily. But had we scored those two goals or those two chances, it's a different game. But there were definitely things to look forward to, some, you know, some positives. But I just think that overall, we just came across a team that was just more on it all game on Friday.
Yeah, yeah. It, to me, it had echoes of Chelsea at the start of last season. Chris?
I mean, the one thing I will disagree with Patrick on, and, you know, we obviously have a very different view. If you're in the stadium and you're constantly having to clap and sing and jump up and down, you're maybe not analysing the game as effectively as you might be able to.
And I will suggest that a couple of beverages were consumed as well.
Before and after, that's definitely true. So that therefore, that's a necessary health warning on the comment I'm about to make. Now, you can't judge a player on one performance, certainly not on their debut for a team. I was expecting far better from Doucouré. I just didn't see what he brought in terms of quality. I was expecting it to be a big step up, and it didn't feel like that to me. Now, that could also be a verdict on the players around him. As you said, Patrick, neither Schlupp nor Eze particularly performed effectively. We might be saying different things if those chances had gone in, perhaps. But ultimately, the midfield didn't work for whatever reason that was. And for me, I think the thing that made a big difference was when Luka came on. As you've hinted, Mike, there was some negativity towards him coming on. But actually, I thought he had the best game I've seen him have, albeit, you know, a late appearance. Best performance I've seen him give in a Palace shirt for 2 years. So it was really nice to see that. And I think, you know, there'll be a battle for that shirt, actually, unless the midfield starts performing more effectively and linking up. Because I thought Luka looked great in this game, and I'd like to see him play in the next one.
So, I know stats can tell a story or not, but just want to throw something out there for you, Chris. Doucouré on Friday had 38 touches, which is less than both Schlupp and Eze, but he had 5 recoveries, and he had a 94% accuracy passing. He misplaced 2 passes. But again, it's a short, it's only 75 minutes, it's his first game, but I'm telling you right now, I've seen him play, you're going to see a massive difference between him and other players in that position we played. That would be Luka or Kyoto. You're going to see a player who's going to break up plays and make accurate passes going forward, not sideways and backwards, more than anybody else. But like I said, it was his first game on Friday. You know, he's got a lot more to show, but I'm telling you right now, you're going to see a lot out of him. And again, you know, we'll see, you know, we'll see exactly what he has going the next, you know, the next 8, 9, 10 games.
Looking forward to it. Like I say, it was a reaction based on how it felt in the ground, which, you know, certainly doesn't reflect those stats, which indicates that, you know, perhaps my judgment isn't right. And that's absolutely fine. I really hope I'm wrong about that and that he turns out to be a breakthrough star. Everyone was very excited about him. Your feedback there, based on what you watched in the game with the benefit of perspective and based in numeric evidence, suggests that I'm not right about that, and I really hope that's the case.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to leave for the listener comments a little bit about comparisons of the midfield to last season and Gallagher as well, because naturally enough, he's still a major point of discussion. Just going to give some stats, really. Quite surprising. We had 10 shots, they had 11. We had 9 from open play and they had 8. So really, there wasn't a great deal in it in terms of going forward. I think it felt more one-sided than it was, just because of the first 20, 25 minutes when we were absolutely destroyed. And we've done a 2-0 victory over people before. They're pushing for an equaliser, go at the other end with a couple of minutes to go and score a second. And we'd been given them quite a lot of stick. And I'll tell you something, Aaron Ramsdale, we'd really, really riled him up, because he was, the only time I've seen a reaction like that was Kasper Schmeichel with the usual chant that we all know that I'm not allowed to repeat. But yeah, so I mean, there's a couple of questions that you've wanted to raise, both of you. So I'll talk about the forwards for a minute, and you mentioned about Benteke being off, and that's going to come up in the listener comments too. But Patrick, you said how many matches do we give Edouard at forward? So presumably you mean how many has he got to start? Do you want to, yeah, expand on your thoughts.
Right. So I'm all for giving Edouard and the run of games, you know, start of the season. The issue is we have a very, very tough start to the season. You guys know we have, you know, Liverpool, Man City, Brentford, Brighton, wherever it is, something like that. Villa, I guess, in the first five or six games. So I see a lot of people from last season saying, you know, the best striker or best forward of the team or on our is Ozan Edouard. I haven't seen it. I saw it against Spurs. His first match, he was brilliant, the two goals. And since then, he's had moments of, you know, quality play, but just consistently hasn't been up. For me, Mateta's better as, you know, in the system. We win when he plays up a striker, etc. So I'm all for giving Edouard, let's say, the first 6-7 matches. But he has to produce, Mike and Chris. He has to produce, because if he doesn't, you've got to go to Mateta. But after that, if they both don't produce, there's no Benteke now. So what do we do? Is it Luke Plange? Now, for me, at least I know with Plange, we have three different styles of forwards. Plange is more of a, oh, I'm not going to compare him to, but he's more of a Michael Owen type. He's smaller, you know, quicker, etc. Edouard loves the ball to his feet. He's got great feet. And Mateta is, you know, he's more physical, a little bit better hold-up play for me than Edouard, and, you know, better in the air. So we have three different types of forwards, but, you know, none of them are really experienced in the Premier League. You can give Mateta a little bit of, you know, because he had a really good stretch from January to the end of the season last year. Came on after we signed him permanently. But my concern with Edouard is that he's coming from Celtic. It's his second season now, so I'm willing to give him. But you can't give him a lot of matches based on the fact we have a very, very tough start to the season. So if I'm Vieira, he has to start against Liverpool. You know, give him, you know, four or five matches. But if he doesn't produce, you have to go to Mateta. And that's what I'm going to say. And I hope he comes through. But I'm really worried about, you know, losing Benteke, our most experienced, you know, striker next to like a Wolf. No one on our team's ever got double digits in goals as a forward besides Wolf and Benteke. You know, if Edouard doesn't start firing soon, we could be in trouble.
Yeah, and I just don't think that Edouard works as a number nine with the system that we play. Now, I think the best work that I've seen him do has been cutting in, usually from the left wing. There have been times where, you know, he's appeared to be being played as a striker, and then I've seen someone cutting in, and I've thought, who on earth is that? Because they're playing really well. I love the way that they're playing, but that's not a striker. Who is it? And then I've realised it's Edouard. That's our striker, cutting in from the left wing. So that's the way that he... that's where I see him doing his best work. He's running at players. And at the moment, that's not usually the way that we are playing football. So I think it's likely that we're going... I mean, I think you're absolutely right, Patrick. We've got to give him a chance in that role. But frankly, we've got to try playing the ball to his feet and giving him something to chase and run onto. And we may not be doing that. And unless we start doing that, then it's going to be Mateta as the big man up front, because that's the style that we've been playing and we're likely to continue to play, unless there's a change that I haven't seen yet on the pitch.
Yeah, I can't disagree, to be honest. The way that the balls came in from Ayew and Zaha, it's to me more likely that Mateta's going to be on the end of it. But the beauty is both of them, I'd say, are, in terms of how skillful they are, they've both got their own individual skill sets, but I don't think either of them would be upset if they both had 45 minutes each in a game. So it's good to know that there's two similar standard strikers, because let's not forget there was periods where Conor Wickham was injured that our major threat up front was looking like it would be Scott Dan. So it's not the worst situation to be in. It's a shame about Benteke, but like you say, there's Luke Plange. I mean, there's even Rob Street if it comes to it in the League Cup and that kind of thing, I suppose. And I wouldn't mind seeing Scott Banks up front. I know he's an attacking midfielder, but quick word on Joachim Andersen. Somebody's put man of the match for them. I can't disagree with that. Looks like whoscored.com agree with this as well. Best Palace ratings on the pitch. The man's just, I mean, we've used the word Rolls Royce before, but so he was so threatening as well as just being an absolute pillar. Quick thoughts on him, gents.
And the thing is, though, Mike, is that not only was he really good with those long balls we know he's good at, he was actually very good defensively. And I think that's the thing people worry about him, is that he's not a very good defender, but I thought he defended really well against Jesus and the threats of Martinelli cutting in and Saka. So credit to him. No, I thought he did really well. I mean, I like the Gehi-Anderson team. I have to admit, I thought Gehi had a poor match, which is a shame. He didn't cost us a game, but I thought Gehi had one of his worst matches, which is a shame, like I said, because he normally, of the two, whenever we talk about Anderson and Gehi normally gets the flowers, as it were. But I thought Anderson played really, really well on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, Gehi can't be amazing every game, I suppose, can he? And we'll close out on the game before we get to listener comments, Chris. I'm assuming it's you that's put this in the show, Doc. How much of a disgrace was the ref? Fire away. I've wound you up now. Fire away, Christopher.
Well, I was furious after the game. I felt that, every time
the ref... And during the game.
Well, yeah, particularly during the game. But I felt that every time that he was given an opportunity to make a decision that was fair and in Palace's favour, he chose not to do it. And it felt like big club bias. I was... frantic with anger at the time. And I'm always prepared with distance to acknowledge that drink and emotion can shape my innate bias. In this case, I've found evidence in the form of a tweet from Main Stand View. And if you look Main Stand View up, you'll find evidence of a penalty call that, for me, is just absolutely ironcast. The Arsenal player moves his hand towards the ball. If gets the ball and the referee gives nothing, and that is exactly the kind of situation that if it was Palace, guaranteed there would be a penalty to Arsenal, and all the officials would be saying, applauding the ref for getting it absolutely right. Well, in this case, I'm not applauding. I'm doing the opposite, as I was at the time, and. It's either deliberate bias or it's incompetence for me. And yeah, that ref really, for me, was a disgrace. I hope we're not going to be saying this, for 37 more games this season, but I have a horrible feeling that we are. You may agree or disagree, but I'll be interested to see what others have to say and also what reaction we get from listeners as well. But, did you see? I mean, I feel like a crime watch. Did you see this man? It was just absolutely outrageous, and it needs to be dealt with now.
Yeah, the referee is Anthony Taylor, who's absolutely rubbish as a referee. And you're talking about Chris's handball by Gabriel. And at the time, I thought it was a handball too, and it went to VAR because everything goes to VAR now. I didn't understand that because you're absolutely right. If that's against Palace, they're calling it as a penalty every time. They are. They did it. They've done it before. Gehi's last year against Leeds. I mean, they called that kind of penalty. I don't understand why that wasn't a penalty based on the review. I don't. And if he had called it, they wouldn't have overturned it. They claim that his hand was in a natural position, but it hit his arm. Isn't that... So, again, but it's frustrating because, like I said, if that's against Palace, I guarantee it's getting called. So, I'm with you, Chris. I mean, I saw it live and I saw the VAR check and... I'm watching the game, but I'm just telling you right now, if he'd called that a penalty, no one could have argued with it. And Arsenal fans who love to moan about, calls against them would have done the same thing. But if that was against Palace, they would have been, oh yeah, how come that wasn't called against, Joel Ward or Nathaniel Klein, whatever. That was a stonewall. That, for me, that was a penalty. I don't know why that wasn't called.
Yeah, I mean, let's not indulge of Arsenal fans. I got one death threat and one being called a racist on Friday evening. Yeah, all good. I'll just temper that by saying I've noticed, I get the impression that there's been a discussion pre-season that they want to speed up the VAR checks.
I agree.
There was a penalty that was clearly should have been a penalty in the Brighton United game. And in a bid to speed up the VAR, they seem to have just knocked it on the head before properly going into it. And then they realised it should have been. So I think we were sort of going, where the hell's the VAR? It looks as though, and Carragher brought it up in comms in the on Soccer Sunday. So let's see how that goes. But, he got VAR. We might as well use it properly. Although they haven't managed to do that in 3 years. So why would they start now?
We're looking for a new sponsor for Back of the Nest. And that could be you. We're offering this prime advertising space on our podcasts and significant exposure across all of our channels, including YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. If you're interested, please email hi@backofthenest.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay, gents. So, usual thing back for this season. If you've not listened to us before, we basically ask some questions. We ask for comments and questions from listeners. We've had some listeners that have been doing it for years and years and years. Some people new to us with some comments and I've not seen their names before. We read them all. We use them to shape the show. So if we don't include it, it doesn't mean don't write again. As chances are you'll get read out and we've included it already. But usual thing, gents, I'll ask you for a quick monologue on what they've said. So we're going to start with Matthew O'Connor. Thank you very much for getting in touch, Matthew. How much have we underestimated the Connor factor? Eze is not his replacement. We seem to forget how many points he actually contributed to us getting momentum from what he did for us, gave us our position in the table. So let's temper that against the Decore comments. Quick thought from you, Patrick.
Eze's not a number 8, he's a 10. So if you're watching, we're playing a different system with a number 10. We didn't do that last year. And we need to get past the Conor Gallagher thing. Listen, unless there's a firm link to us getting him back, he's not coming back. So we can talk about Conor Gallagher and how much we miss him. We have to move on from Conor Gallagher because he's not coming back. So we do need number 8. I agree with that. I don't think Jeffrey Schlupp can do that job. I like Schlupp, but I don't think he can do the job. But yeah, Conor was great last year. Loved him. He was brilliant. He's not leaving Chelsea to come back to Palace, barring some outrageous bid that we're going to make because we're desperate. I don't see that happening. So we can do this every single week till the window closes. Conor Gallagher's not coming back to Palace. So we need a number 8. I agree with that. He was great last season. Don't compare him to Eze because Eze's not a number 8. He's a 10. Compare him to Schlupp if you want, or if Jairo ever gets a chance, which does not like that happen, or whatever, but he's not coming back. So I'm getting a little frustrated about the Conor stuff because, like I said, he was great for us. He's not coming back. We've got to move on. We need to find someone to replace him. I agree with that, but I don't know who that's going to be, honestly.
Well, let's get Chris to answer the next comment, which covers that. And I will say I saw a Joe Riedewald t-shirt on eBay for 99p. So
put a bit on Gyro. That.
Yeah.
Gyro.
Yeah, exactly. So long-suffering listener Andy the Twat 1992. The mention of Gallagher is apparent, but we've got similar player in Phillips, who's the same engine. We don't need to splash millions on Connor. Well, I don't think we've got an option on that, really, to be honest, Andy. When we've already got that replacement, give the kid a go. Chris, Killian Phillips, have you seen anything of him? I mean, is that the answer? What is the answer? Other than what Patrick said, which is, you know, sound advice, let's just forget about it.
I'll be honest, I'm not familiar enough with Killian Phillips to comment on whether he can make that step up. We all want to see kids given a chance, and you know that. But if that was going to happen, I would have thought that you'd have kind of seen the groundwork laid for that in pre-season, and I haven't felt like that's been what's happening. But you know, that said, if things don't change, I mean, so this game, the midfield for me didn't work as a combination. With this game, you have to assume that Vieira's played what he, you know, what he decided was his best available set of players and his preferred system. So he's not going to just switch the system just like that. He might be able to change players, but I mean, I don't think Vieira's much more of a gambler than Hodgson in some respects, in that What we are missing, obviously, is Elise. That's one option, but that's wing. We're talking about centres, central midfield, and I don't feel we've got the depth in that position. I can see us going and buying someone. I think there was another question along those lines, but
let me just say that then. So, eagle-eyed football, who's the best, most realistic number eight that we can get? I mean, are we started the quick one-word answer? Do you think we're actually going to sign anyone else? I'm not convinced.
I think we will.
Yeah,
and if we're going to
sign,
if we're going to sign anyone, then we won't know who that is. It's not going to be a situation with all the paper talk, and reports for weeks that we're linked with this player or that player. It'll be someone we've not heard of, or we're looking at it as
that's the way Dougie rolls, isn't it?
And rightly so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rightly so, because otherwise they get nicked by West Ham.
Scott Banks has scored a couple in the pre-season game I saw the other day. I mean, so you reckon we will get someone else, Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, there have been tons of links. I mean, there was the crazy one with Mariba, who's playing for Red Bull Leipzig. Let me tell you, we got him. If we get Mariba, which I know it kind of died down over the weekend, he's a fantastic box-to-box. He's really, really highly rated. He's a Paul Pogba type. He's that good. But Morgan Gibbs-White was a shout, but he's going to stay at Wolves because they need him because they're going to have a tough season. And they want 30, 40 million for him. We can't afford that. But like you guys just said, I trust Dougie to get someone. Listen to Vieira post-match. He knows we're still light in midfield. And there's no way we're not going to get someone. I don't think it's going to be someone that we've heard of necessarily. But I do trust Dougie to get the right person for Vieira. I really do.
And if it is Gyro, then that T-shirt will be 99p well spent.
I love it.
Tea time. So this is a controversial one. And I'm going to take the answer on this first, if you don't mind, gents. Anderson, a central defensive midfielder, plays there for Denmark. Richard slides in at centre-back. I heard the onboarding interviews with Richards and I was so impressed. Tell a bit about him. I mean, I'm excited. I'm glad he signed. There's, no side is going to get by with just their number one and number two central defenders. So, it's good that there's an option there. However, Anderson, man of the match, has been amazing. Spraying balls left, right and centre. Works well with Gaye, an excellent combination. I think Hambo said he probably finally thought it was a better combination than Sacco and Tompkins, which he's often said he thought was the best defensive pairing that he's ever seen as a Palace fan in 20-odd years. I just don't see them splitting that up. Interesting idea. We've gone down this route before where we've had Luka in defence. And to an extent, they are slightly in. You can move them around and have defenders as midfielders when needed. But it seems to me tinkering for the sake of tinkering.
Mike, do you know who Tea Time is, by the way?
I believe he's the guy from YouTube, right? That's another reason to go and have a listen on YouTube.
Yeah, he's my co-host. That's Tea.
Okay.
And by the way, yes, I agree with you, Mike. Chris Richards is going to, let me just say, when Palace fans see him play, you're going to be surprised how good he is. I'm telling right now, he's going to be he'll probably be the best player that we've got in this window. And I'm not just saying it just to say because he's American. He's a really good player. If he's injury free, looks like he is because he was on the bench on Friday. And like you just said, rightly so, we're going to need more than just Gaye and Anderson for the entire season. There's going to be obviously League Cup games and even games when Gaye and Anderson either aren't playing well or injured or just came back from international duty. He's a really good player. I can see him also slotting into a back three. And I think that at some point, if we get a new right back, we haven't talked about that, but if we get a new right back that can actually get up and down the wings a little better, I think we'll see a back three very, very soon. I think that's definitely going to be preferred by Vieira because he has now three centre backs that can play the style that he wants to play. I think you're going to be surprised how good Chris Richards really is.
Oh, that's exciting stuff. I am excited for that. Okay, Chris, I'll let you take on this one from Grumpy Dad. Excellent stuff. Do we need another striker now Benteke is gone? I think we touched on this, but quick succinct answer on that. Bad boy?
Depends whether we change the way we're playing. And we've only really got the two options, although we've got players who can drop in. I wouldn't be surprised to see another addition, but I think with the way we're trying to do things at the moment as a club, it seems to be buy, you know, young players and get the value. So it won't be for me. I don't think we'll be buying someone who's a famous, you know, number nine goal scorer. And do we need one? Might feel that way, and we may come to regret it at the end of the season, but I don't think the club's going to do it. And I think we're just going to have to make the players we've got fit the system we have to play. Maybe that we have to change system, but let's see.
Yeah, and I mean, similar comment from Leif Anderson's forehead. Good to have you back, sir. Surely we're going to get another forward in now when Teke is gone. Do you see us getting another one in, Patrick?
I do not. I like what you said before, Mike. I'd love to give Plunge that chance at the third striker. And then if not him, you got Rob Streak, Victor Akinwale, Adebomi. I mean, yes, they're young, they're teenagers. But honestly, let's give them a chance. I mean, I don't think we only need a fourth person, because I'm going to use Plunge as number three if Mateta and Eduardo are injured, which hopefully won't happen. But I don't think we need another striker. But again, that's on Vieira, honestly, if he wants to bring one in. But you're right. A big name striker, as Chris said, we're not going to put the money on that. So if we're going to spend them on a young striker, why even bother when you've already got Plunge? And even Eboué can play as a forward. He's done that. So I don't think we'll get someone, honestly. I don't think so.
I think it's more likely midfield. I've got to agree with you on that. We'll finish off. One comment from Nick of this parish: does producer Sam know where her seat is? Doesn't seem like it, because she just comes and stands with us in the increasingly large throng in A block. At some point, I think the whole stand's just going to collapse under the weight of people just standing there. It was great to see a couple of day trippers that are clearly bought tickets in an area they assumed would be a nice evening out, and they were absolutely petrified. So we'll end up with, I cannot pronounce your name, but 802 Match CHR. I've done you no justice with your Twitter handle there, but thank you very much. Do we give Decore a better fellow central midfielder than Jeff when we play top six teams? Does Eze need to play eight if we don't pick someone up before the window closes? And he says, personally, I think we played very well. I'm not that concerned, other than having to play at Anfield next. I think we've covered about Eze not being a number eight, but yeah, I mean, Decore, a better fellow central midfielder. It's the gap we've talked about, isn't it? But I think Jimmy Mack would have done great things against Arsenal. He's exactly the kind of player that they hate playing against.
Yeah, and like you said, I think you said before, Mike, how about give Gyro a chance? I mean, maybe not against Liverpool, but I mean, what? I feel so bad for Gyro. Can we just give him a chance? Can we give him the Edward 5-6 games, and if he's no good, then bin him off? But he can't. What has he done wrong in the last 2 years? He can't even get like a 5-game run in this in our midfield. I mean, I'm sorry. I love Gyro. I just do. Sorry.
Yeah, total agreement. Yeah. Last thought from you, Chris, before we wrap up.
Well, you know, we've obviously got a preview show coming up for the Liverpool game. My thought, you know, based on what exactly the points that have just come out of this discussion, is, you know, you never know which version of Liverpool's going to turn up, whether it's the one that can beat us 9-0 or the one that, you know, looks really, really angry and, you know, maybe we don't beat them, but we nab a point. I'm optimistic that if we fine-tune, you know, we can get something out of that game, even though it will be hard.
Well, in the words of Prince William, it's the hope that bends you over and pegs you. Right, well, thank you very much for listening to the show. And thanks in particular to everyone who got in touch. We do read them, as I said. We can't use them all, but everything we get helps us create the show. And we will get to your comments. So thank you very much. The preview boys said they're now recording on a Wednesday. So that should be in your ears Thursday, ahead of that tricky aforementioned trip to Anfield. But it is an annoying Monday game, so we've got that usual problem with the review and the preview fitting in. We might have to do a one-off pod that covers both, but then we're back to normal after it's home game against Villa after that. Am I right? Someone help me out.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Anyway, a home game of some kind. But yeah, thanks very much. Make sure you subscribe to YouTube. Make sure you have a listen on Spotify, etc., etc. And until then, thanks again, and up the Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.